Welcome to Animal Companions. This is Joyce, your Radio Reading Service volunteer broadcaster, welcoming you to this edition of Animal Companions, where we read about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Today I'll be reading some more chapters from Smells Like Pirates by Suzanne Selfors, and if we have some time, I'll be reading some articles and newsletters about the animals in our lives. We'll start today's readings with Smells Like Pirates by Suzanne Selfors. In the last chapters, we learned that Lorelei, Hercules, Homer, and Dog were looking for help in deciphering the treasure map. They tried to engage the help from the Map of the Month Club, but only to be met with resistance. Chapter 18, The Office of Celestial Navigation. They stood in a narrow corridor. Other than the elevator, there was only one door, and a sign on it read, Office of Celestial Navigation. Homer knocked. No one answered. He knocked again and was willing to wait politely, but Lorelei grabbed the knob and pushed it open. Dog squeezed past Lorelei's legs and pulled Homer inside. There could be no doubt they'd reached the topmost floor, because the domed ceiling was made of glass panels. A solid square platform had been constructed at the top of the dome. That's where the enormous globe sat. Homer took a long look around the room, which seemed to him to be a mapmaker's dream come true. The room itself was cluttered with rolled parchments. Crowded bookshelves covered the northern wall. A table laden with all sorts of map-making instruments and more rolls of parchment stretched across the room. The tabletop was painted like a blackboard. Drawings and equations had been scribbled here and there in different colored chalks. Dust coated the floor, except for a trail made by footprints that led from a cot to the table and then to a stepladder and back again. The stepladder led to a porthole where a telescope pointed up to the sky. Seven other portholes were spaced at equal intervals around the dome's perimeter. Dog tugged the leash from Homer's grip, then began to mosey around the room. Homer didn't go after him because he'd noticed someone standing at the top of the stepladder. The person's back was to Homer, but he could tell it was a girl because she had two long red braids and wore a black skirt and a pair of knee socks. He assumed she was a child because she was very short. She was probably the daughter of whoever worked in this office. Because she was peering into the telescope's eyepiece, she hadn't noticed the visitors. Homer cleared his throat. "Excuse me, is your mom or dad here?" The girl turned and glared down at him. A bushy beard and a mustache covered most of her face. When she spoke, her voice was deep and grumbling, "Ma ma and ma pa are lang dead." Apparently she wasn't a she after all, nor was she a child, because she was a he. The skirt was actually a kilt.
"How'd you get here?"
the small man asked. "Up the door was open."
"Open, you say?
I thought I'd closed it. Well, what do you want?" Lorelei stepped forward. "Do you read celestial maps?"
"Who wants to know?"
"We do," Homer answered.
"And who are we?"
There was so much hair on the man's face, it was difficult to read his expression, and his accent was thick and tricky to understand.
"Don't tell him our real names," Lorelei whispered in Homer's ear.
"I wouldn't do that," Homer told her under his breath. The last thing he wanted was to get arrested for trespassing, and if he told this man his real name, then his parents might be contacted. They'd be a big lecture and maybe some jail time. Mr. Pudding would assign Homer a whole mess of extra chores, and Mrs. Pudding would tell Ajitaba, and everyone would be disappointed and upset. "We're students," Homer said, keeping with the original lie, which was so much easier than inventing a new one. Lies, once they begin to pile up, become very difficult to keep track of. "We have to read a celestial map for a school report, and
I dinna care nothing about school reports."
The man turned away and pressed his eye to the telescope eyepiece. "Do you care about subscribers?" Hercules asked. Homer's a subscriber to the Map of the Month Club. Then Hercules took a quick breath and whispered, "Oops, I said your name."
"I dinna care nothing about subscribers."
"But you work for Map of the Month Club," Lorelei said. "Without the subscribers, you wouldn't have a job, so you should help us."
"I dinna work for no map club. I just live up here, and I dinna care nothing about helping no one. I just want to be left alone." If the kilt-wearing man didn't work for the map club, and he was simply living on the topmost floor, as he said, then he had to know something about Lost. Otherwise, why would a lost coin be necessary for admittance? Homer reached into his shirt to grab his membership coin, but Lorelei stopped him. She leaned close to his ear and again whispered, "Don't show him that. We don't know if we can trust him." "But the coin got us in here," Homer said. "That's a good point," Hercules said, huddling up to the other two as if they were about to play a game of football. Lorelei rolled her eyes. "Yes, but if he knows about Lost, then he probably knows about Rumpold's treasure. We can't let him figure out we've got Rumpold's map." "That's a really good point," Hercules said. Yes, of course it was a really good point. Lorelei was full of good points. Homer sighed and let go of the coin's chain. Then he looked back up the ladder. "If you can't read celestial maps, then do you have a book that might help us?" "I never said I could not read celestial maps. I'm an expert on celestial maps and celestial navigation, but I didn't care about helping you. Now, away with you, away with you." "He's so rude," Lorelei grumbled. "Keep him distracted while Hercules and I go look on the bookshelves." She motioned for Hercules to follow, and they tiptoed over to the shelves. A chewing sound caught Homer's attention. Uh-oh. He whipped around. "Dog?" For reasons Homer had yet to figure out, dog loved paper. It didn't matter if the paper came in the form of a magazine or a library book. It didn't matter if it was a brochure on goat grooming or a school report on Tasmanian wombats. The paper could be colored, lined, or plain white. It might have wrapped a birthday present, or it might have wrapped lamb chops from the butcher. Dog loved paper in all its shapes and forms, and that is why he stood on the topmost floor eating one of the rolls of parchment. Homer hurried to Dog's side and yanked the parchment from his mouth. It was a map. "How many times do I have to tell you not to eat other people's maps?" Homer scolded, though he was more embarrassed than angry. Being angry at such a great dog was nearly impossible. Dog wagged his tail apologetically. A shred of paper stuck to his chin. "How can you be hungry already?" Homer shook his head in wonder. Dog had eaten a bunch of vending machine snacks in Lorelei's lair. For a creature who exerted such little energy, he needed a surprising amount of refueling. "I'll get you something when we're done here." Clunking footsteps sounded as the red-haired man stomped down the ladder. Homer hid the ruined map behind the desk, certain that the man was going to start hollering about the destruction of his property. After the man stepped onto the floor, he walked over to Dog. His eyebrows were bushy as his beard. He was shorter than Homer, had first thought standing at about 3.5 feet tall, and some of that height was provided by his wild red hair. He picked the shred of paper from Dog's chin. "I'm sorry he ate your map. I hope it wasn't an important map." "Is Yana wee basset hound?" "Yes," Homer said. "No one has ever described Dog as wee, and Homer certainly wouldn't have chosen that word, not after carrying Dog through the revolving door. I'd wee basset hound when I was a lad. I loved ye wand hard. Was that a tear sparkling at the corner of a man's eye? I've soft spot in my heart for bassets. Can you guess why?" He looked up at Homer. "Because you had one when you were..." Homer almost said the little word, but was afraid that word might insult the man. "When you were a lad?" "Aye, but there's another reason." The man crouched and scratched beneath Dog's chin. "We both had genetic markers of dwarfism. That's why we both had short legs." Homer nodded. When he'd first met Zelda, she'd explained that while Dog had a condition that kept him from growing, she had a condition that made her grow very fast, hence her 8-foot-2-inch status, genetic markers, Homer repeated. "I've often wondered if I have some genetic marker that makes me afraid of things," Hercules called from the bookcase. "I have lots of phobias." The man stopped scratching Dog and stood. "Which sort of things are you afraid of?" he asked. "All sorts of things. Germs, bullies, feather pillows, random objects falling on my head, forgetting to take my vitamins." "Why do you live up here if you don't work for the Map of the Month Club?" Lorelei interrupted. She made a new path on the dusty floor as she walked along the bookcase. "I don't like people," the man grumbled. "I'm a hermit." "Really?" Hercules asked. "Then you might have anthropophobia." "Many hermits do. That's fear of people, and I don't have anthropophobia, but I'm afraid of my brothers and sister. They're sports-playing meatheads. I'm also afraid of poisonous snakes. That's called ophidiophobia. I'm afraid of yellow bits of popcorn that get stuck in your throat, but I don't know what that's called. The one thing I'm not afraid of is skydiving. Hello. Can we get back to maps? Lorelai asked irritably. She walked up to Homer and whispered, There are a million books over there. I don't know where to begin. We need his help. Homer smiled nicely at the man. Could you please help us read our map? It's definitely a star chart, but I don't know how to read it. I can pay you. I've got lots of money, Lorelai said. I didn't care about money, lassie. I told ya, I didn't like people. Dog, as if on cue, licked the man's hand. Then he turned his sad eyes up and whined. It was an expression that only the cold-hearted could ignore. The man's beard and mustache rustled. I'll make an exception, but only because yab one ye wee hound. From the sweetest tone in the man's voice, Homer assumed that a smile was hiding under all that hair. Come away, will ye, or on my table. Chapter 19. Sky Dragon. The odd little man climbed onto one of the stools, pushed aside a protractor and a ruler, then sat on the blackboard table. Lorelei, Homer, and Hercules each grabbed a stool and gathered around, while Dog stretched out on the floor beneath the table. Lorelei took the map from the inside pocket of her jumpsuit, unfolded it, then set it on the table in front of the man. He whistled,
What happened to yon map? Looks like it's been eaten by Nessie herself.
Who? Homer said.
Nessie, lad. The Loch Ness Monster.
It was eaten by a monster? Homer wanted to say. An image of a mutant tortoise filling his mind, but a comment like that would surely lead to the conversation off track and annoy Lorelei, best kept to the issue at hand. I know these are stars, but I don't know how much about the constellations they are. Can you figure it out? The man stared at the map. He turned one way and then another. Then he turned it another way. Then he turned it again and again until, with a satisfied grunt, he announced, You got yourself a Draco.
A Draco?
Both Homer and Lorelei asked. That's Latin for dragon, Hercules said. The man grabbed a piece of blue chalk and began to draw on the map.
Hey, wait a minute, Lorelei
said, reaching out to stop him, but Homer held her back. It's okay. It's just chalk. We can wipe it off if we need to. They watched as the man expertly connected some of the dots. When he'd finished, a dragon lay across the map, the tip of its tail at one end, its head at the other. It's one of the oldest constellations. The Egyptians identified it way back when the pyramids were made. But the Greeks were the ones to name it Draco the Lion because of yon myth. Lorelei sat up straight.
What myth?
That one about Hercules and the dragon with 100 heads.
Oh, I know that myth. Hercules' 11th labor was to steal golden apples from the dragon, but he couldn't do it alone, so he asked Atlas for help.
She glanced at Homer. By the way, Atlas was the guy who held up the world. That's why the Atlas is named after him.
By the way?
Of course Homer knew the fact. Anyone who knew anything about maps knew that Atlases were named after Atlas. He rolled his eyes. She was such a know-it-all. Lorelei continued, So Hercules, being super strong, held up the world while Atlas went to get the apples. That's how Hercules completed his 11th labor.
Why is the star drawn bigger than the others? Homer asked, pointing to a star near the end of the dragon's tail.
Yon's the North Star, the man said.
Polaris? Homer said.
Nay, it's a star called Thuban.
The man scratched his beard. It used to be the North Star, but it isn't any more.
What are you talking about? Lorelei asked, leaning her elbows on the table. Stars don't change.
But we do, lassie.
The earth moves, it wobbles on its axis, and it takes 26,000 years to make one full wobble. That's why every 26,000 years, the North Pole points to a different star. When Draco was discovered, the North Star wasn't Polaris, it was Thuban.
I never knew that. Homer admitted. He spent most of his map-reading days focused on the surface of the earth, not fixed at the heavens. Star charting was new territory.
As the conversation proceeded, Hercules took notes in his notebook. He was very serious about his recording-keeping duties.
I don't understand. Where does this map take us? I mean, how does celestial navigation work? Celestial navigation is the art and science of using celestial bodies to determine the observer's position on Earth. Then he tapped a finger on Rumpold's map. Draco is a constellation in that far northern sky. Year mapmaker, when tay that far north, and draw your map. Well, I guess that's a start, but where exactly is that far north? The man pointed to the date scrawled in the map's bottom corner. I still don't understand, Lorelei said. Homer thought he knew the answer to this. I think the date is important because the view of the sky is always changing, but the Earth's surface pretty much stays the same. So if you stood on a mountain and looked down, the coastline would look the same whether you stood there on a Saturday or a Monday, or whether you stood there in January or in October. He glanced at the man, who nodded for Homer to continue. But if you stood at the same mountain and looked up at the sky, would be totally different one day to the next. So that's why the date matters. Aye, said the man with a smack of his knees. You got it, lad. So we have a date, and we have the image of the sky. Then we can figure out exactly where the mapmaker was standing when he drew the map. Aye, the man smacked the knee again. Then he scrambled off the table and headed for his cot. Well, I read it for you. Now away with you. My brain is hurting. Too many people, too much blethering. After climbing onto the cot, he lay on his back and closed his eyes. Homer, Lorelei, and Hercules shared a confused look. Wait, Lorelei called. How do we figure it out? Computation, the man said, his eyes still closed. Huh? Lorelei asked. Math, Hercules told her. He means we have to use math. Math? Oh, I hate math, groaned Lorelei. I'm not fond of it either, Hercules said. I can translate mathematical terminology for you, but when it comes to manipulating numbers, I'm pathetic. They both looked at Homer expectantly. They were probably waiting for him to say, oh, I love math. No problem. I'm some kind of math genius, he grimaced, remembering the bright red C- on his last math test. Sure, he could have studied more, but given the choice between studying a map on the serious crop circles of the American Midwest or studying fractions, well, he'd made the obvious choice. I'm not so good at math either, he admitted. They still desperately needed the man's help. Experts on celestial navigation didn't grow on trees. Team lost and found would probably have to travel to a different city just to find another one. And there was no time to do that. Homer was expected back on the farm in just 5 days. It was now or never, and that's why he crawled under the table to wake Dog. Hey, he whispered in Dog's ear, we need you. Go over there. Wag your tail. Give him your sad face. Again. Dog was sound asleep. His belly rose and falls steadily. His back leg twitched as he chased something in dreamland. Dog! Homer gently shook him. Dog! Opened one eye. Come on, Homer whispered, dragging him toward the cot. Be charming. Dog's ears were extra long, even for a basset hound, swept the dusty floor like furry mops. He opened his other eye just as he came to a stop at the foot of the man's cot. Clearly assuming that a new napping spot had been chosen for him, Dog closed his eyes and began to snore. The freight train-like sound caught the man's attention and he sat up. Aye, the poor wee thing, he's fair and worn out. The man grabbed a pillow, jumped off the cot, and tucked the pillow under Dog's head. Yes, he's very tired, Homer said. He's tired because it's been a long trip. We came all the way from the country just to find a celestial navigation expert. The country, you say? Yon's a long way for a basset to travel, the man patted Dog's paw. Dog farted. Aw, the poor beastie. Aye, the travel has upset his disposition. He's a mess, Homer said. He even had to go through a revolving door. A revolving door? The man's bushy eyes flew to the top of his head as he stared up at Homer. Bassets hate revolving doors. Everyone knows that. But he went through one because he wanted an answer to the map, same as us, Homer said. Of course, this was a huge stretch of the truth, but it was the only tactic Homer could think about. The man wasn't fond of people, but his love of basset hounds might persuade him to offer more assistance. Just think how disappointed Dog'll be if we have to go all the way back to the country without the answer to our question. We don't have any celestial navigators back home. We might have to go on another long trip to find one. We might have to go through more revolving doors.
The man threw up his hands into the air. Nay, dinna be doing that. Let the beastie rest.
He stomped back over to the table, climbed the stool, and sat on the blackboard surface.
What kind of person makes a basset hound walk through a revolving door? He mumbled, and he grabbed a ruler, calculator, and protractor, a compass, and a bunch of other things. What is this world coming to?
Good work, Lorelei said, nudging Homer's eye and arm as he returned to the stool. He smiled and rested his arms on the table, watching as the man began to take measurements of Rumpold's map. Anticipation shot down Homer's spine. One day, a long time ago, Rumpold Smeller the pirate had stared up at the sky. Draco the dragon had greeted him. Wherever Rumpold had stood at that moment in time was where he'd buried his treasure. Together, Homer, Lorelei, and Hercules took a long breath, their lungs filling with possibilities. The answer was just a few calculations away.
Well, we'll find out whether this man with this bushy beard can help them when we read Smells Like Pirates by Susan Thelfors next week. Our next reading, Black and Fluffy. Welcome, Neutrino. Guide Dogs for the Blind recently welcomed into the world a unique, long-coated Labrador Golden Retriever cross puppy named Neutrino. What makes this adorable pup so distinctive? He is a Guide Dog for the Blind's first long-coated puppy that is black in color. We are so excited to share some details about just how unique he is for our dog population. Guide Dogs for the Blind makes breeding selections based on the highest potential that the resulting offspring will succeed as working guide dogs. At the same time, we try to provide our clients with the opportunity to satisfy personal preferences they may have regarding breed, color, or gender of the dog they are paired with. While the greatest proportion of graduating dogs at Guide Dogs for the Blind are Labrador Retrievers, black, yellow, and occasionally chocolate, Guide Dog for the Blind also graduates Golden Retrievers and Labrador Golden Cross breeds. GDB first introduced Lab Golden Cross dogs into the program in mid-1990 and quickly realized that benefits to the health and success of the breeds was bringing the genetic traits of these two dogs together. So what does this have to do with a long-coated black puppy? To understand how this puppy came to be, we need to review some basic genetic principles. Genes are a set of micro-instructions contained within an animal's DNA, which determine what traits are inherited and the appearance of the animal, known as a phenotype. Each gene has two copies, which are inherited, one from each parent. There are lots of genes which determine coat length and color in dogs, and many types of inheritance patterns that influence appearance. The most common is a dominant-recessive relationship. A gene copy is said to be dominant when it effectively overrules the other recessive gene copy. Genes that determine the length of a dog's coat generally have a simple dominant-recessive relationship. Short is dominant, long is recessive. This means a long-coated breed like a Golden Retriever has two copies of the long coat gene, while purebred Labradors have two copies of the short coat gene. In the case of a Labrador Golden Cross, there are some additional considerations. Since puppies inherit one gene copy from each parent, this means the first generation of a Lab and a Golden pairing will result in all puppies inheriting one copy of the short-coated gene from the Lab and one copy of the long-coated gene from the Golden. Because the short-coated gene is dominant, all puppies will have a short coat, but carry the gene for a long coat. Now imagine one of those short-coated Lab Golden Cross puppies grows up and becomes a guide dog breeder dog. If that dog is bred to a Golden, then all the puppies in the resulting litter will inherit one copy of the long-coated gene from the Golden. But the short-coated genes will be randomly assigned. Some puppies will inherit the copy of the short-coated gene. Others will inherit the copy of the long-coated gene. This means we can have both short-coated and long-coated puppies in the same litter. In the case of Neutrino, our long-coated black puppy, we have to add color into the mix as well. Goldens are all yellow, while Labs can be black, yellow, or occasionally chocolate. GDB has occasionally had female black Lab Golden Cross dogs in its breeder population, including a dog named Napoli.
Napoli's dad is a black lab, and her mom is a yellow, short-haired, golden lab cross. Napoli has a short coat, and we know she could only inherit a copy of the short-coated gene from her dad. But what we didn't know is whether she inherited a copy of the long or short-coated gene from her mom. For Napoli's first litter, we matched her with a lovely male golden, Brewster, who complemented her health and temperamental traits. And then we waited. We knew there were many possibilities for color and coat and length, and that would be determined by Mother Nature's roll of the genetic dice. Napoli's 8 puppies were born September 15, 2022, and all were yellow except for one male, Neutrino. We had to wait several weeks for the pup's hair to grow long enough for us to determine the coat length. 4 weeks of age, it was clear that 4 puppies would have short coats, 4 would have long coats, including Neutrino, to our delight. It is important to note that the selection of factors to become a guide dog breeder dog are based solely on health and temperament traits rather than appearance, and the same is true when choosing pairings between males and females. We are always focused on breeding healthy dogs who will become working guides or canine buddies. So while it is less likely, it is certainly possible that we will continue to occasionally see chocolate labs, black lab golden crosses, and now long-coated black lab crosses, when the ideal matchup includes these possibilities and all the genetic stars align. Well, this article is rather interesting and a little bit complicated. I hope you enjoyed it. It's titled Black and Fluffy, Welcome Neutrina. Well, that brings us to the conclusion of today's show. I hope you enjoyed the readings, and I invite you back again next time to hear more stories about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Until then, this is Joyce for Animal Companions and for Sun Sounds of Arizona, a radio reading service. Be well, everyone. Stay healthy. Be happy. Bye-bye.